It's One-on-One. I'm Charles Wolforth. It's our weekly coffee house conversation with some of Alaska's most interesting people. And I am privileged and excited to have also one of Alaska's funniest people with us today, Chad Carpenter, the cartoonist of Tundra. Thanks for being with us.
You bet. Thank you, Charles.
So we were talking about how you became a cartoonist and how long it took you. You know, now you've got cartoons in 300 newspapers across the country?
A little over 500 now.
That's incredible.
I'm amazed myself, actually, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And yet you're still living in Wasilla, taking care of your one-year-old, being a regular guy.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change it.
Well, but your success didn't come overnight.
No. I started drawing Tundra in 1991, December of 91, is when it first started running in the Anchorage Daily News. Uh-huh. And it, for the first 14 or 15 years, it was only in Alaska papers, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Sitka, Juneau, and I think the UAA paper.
So were you making your living at it then, or was it just a hobby?
It was, not because of what the newspapers pay, because you can't make a living off five newspapers. It's because of the merchandise. Shortly after I got in the Daily News, I knew that the only way I was going to make a living at it and avoid a job was to come out with something I could sell. Uh-huh. And I first came out with my first book in 1992.
Okay.
Yeah.
And have you, so those were like picked up by publishers and put in bookstores, or did you have to self-publish it? Or how
I
did
self-published.
You
got a bank loan. My mom and dad co-signed on the loan.
Oh, wow.
And we published 3,000 copies. And my first few books were small. They were like Garfield books, little black and white. And we did 3,000 copies and got a distributor to distribute them to the stores locally. Uh-huh. And within 6 weeks, they were all gone. They were in the stores. I didn't get paid for them yet, but they were at least in the stores on the shelves.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I really, that was my aha moment. It was like, oh, maybe I can make a living off of this.
Uh-huh. So what had you been doing before that?
I was a security guard and I was going through the process of the Trooper Academy.
Oh, really? Wow.
I was going to be a state trooper. That was, you know, I always loved this cartooning. Uh-huh. But I didn't think I could make a living in it.
Uh-huh.
And so the fallback was State Trooper. And
so suddenly these books are selling and you say, oh my gosh, it might be so really
yeah.
want to do this.
And I had to go to my recruiter and tell him, I had to say, you know, I got to make a decision. Do I stick with the Trooper program or do I go with the cartooning? And he was really, his name was Mr. Rogers, and he was a wonderful, wonderful guy.
He knew you have a cardigan sweater?
Yeah, he wasn't quite that friendly looking. He was more of a hardcore Army Sergeant type. But he was really wonderful. He knew I was a cartoonist, and they were getting ready. I was getting ready to be sent to Sitka for the academy, and I said, you know, if I don't try this, I'm going to always wonder if, what if.
Yeah.
And he made my decision easy. He said, you're a loser. We don't want you anyway. No, actually, that's what I was expecting. No. He says, tell you what. He says, give the cartooning 2 years. If it doesn't work, come back. We'll get you right back in.
Uh-huh.
And so that was easy.
Wow.
So luckily it worked, and I'm too goofy to carry a gun, so we're all safer for it.
How many people make that choice, state trooper or cartoonist?
Yeah. You know? As it was, not a lot of people choose to be a cartoonist.
And unfortunately, most people say, oh, the creative thing, that's just a dream, or that's just what I was going to do when I was a kid. Now I have to be practical and do my real career. But somehow you decided that that wasn't what you were going to do. You were going to go for it.
I decided it's, you know, after I noticed those books were gone, I knew there was a chance, and so I took it from there.
Yeah. So so then it continued sort of at that level for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for 14 or 15 years, I got picked up by other papers, but it didn't change a lot. You know, I'd do the weekend markets here in Anchorage, the fairs.
Oh, so you just sit, sign books, sell books?
Yeah, just doing my little rounds and making a good living and having a good time. I had time to play golf and all that, but that all changed about 6 years ago, and now I don't have time to do anything. So, but Tundra's gotten a lot more spread out, which is wonderful.
Well, I mean, you think of these comic strips that are in all the papers in the country as being, you know, that's a big time. I mean, that's like as far as you can go in your career, you know. So you're like you're a celebrity now. Like, you know, you're O.J. Simpson, you're Britney Spears,
O.J. Simpson, yeah. Not yet. I like my wife still, so. But, and I haven't shaved my head, so I'm not Britney yet. But yeah, it's been a surprise to me, it really has. Because now, you know, in the last few years, I joined the National Cartoonist Society. Mm-hmm. And every year, a bunch of the cartoonists, 400 or so of them, get together in a different city every year. And they have to go to different cities because of all the restraining orders from the previous year. So, but
So the cartoon convention gets a little...
Yeah, it's rowdy.
So like a Three Stooges convention?
It is, with a lot of alcohol. But but now it's really fun because I go there and I'm surrounded by my heroes. You know, people I read since I was a little kid in the paper, and here they are right there, you know, I feel like I'm faking it.
I figured like that you were the hero for some folks, because, I mean, your cartoon's actually funny.
Well, I appreciate that. I do. I get lucky every now and then. But
well, I mean, that's something I wanted to talk about is that, you know, if most people, you told them, okay, well, it's 8 o'clock, you know, by 9 o'clock, you have to come up with something funny, they would say, well, that's impossible. You know, humor just it comes, like, from a situation or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you actually do have to come up with something funny every day.
Yeah, I have to try.
It seems like that's where a lot of cartoonists, I mean, they just lose that funny bone somewhere along the line, and it gets routine. But you just seem like your work has been getting better and better.
I appreciate that. Thank you. But it's definitely the hardest part is the ideas. I struggle every day, and I have for 20 years. It is always difficult to get that idea. Every now and then I'll get lucky, and something will just bang, it's there. It's completely formed in my head, and I just scribble it on a napkin. But that doesn't happen very often. Usually I have to build them. It starts as me just think about, you know, a rabbit in a hot tub or whatever. What would make that funny? Okay, and I try to think of how to turn that into something humorous, and usually it doesn't work, and I have to move on to something else. And each idea might take 1 to 2 hours to, if I'm totally alone where it's quiet, 1 to 2 hours for a good idea.
And so, are you just like sitting there like a monk, or are you sketching while you do that, or how do you process the thoughts?
I get most of my ideas while I'm half asleep. Mm-hmm. I have a separate room in the house that has a monster bean bag, and I lay in that beanbag, and there's a window there. It looks out on the lake up behind our house.
Yeah.
And I get in that zone. It's like hypnosis, self-hypnosis. And I get in that zone where you're just half awake and half asleep. And we've all been there. You know, we all do it twice a day at least when we're going to sleep or when we're waking up. We're all in that state. I don't know what REM state that is.
Yeah.
But when I'm in that state, as long as I don't cross over into full sleep, I'm able to focus on things in my mind, and all the things that might, you know, worrying about bills doesn't cross my mind, whether the kids are on fire, that doesn't cross my mind. It's I'm able to focus on comics and when I'm in that zone. And then if I get an idea while I'm in there, I kind of wake up a little bit, write it on a notebook, I don't sketch it,
I just
write words. Mm-hmm. And then I go back into the zone, try to get more.
Wow. So not being stressed, not like worrying about, oh my God, I got to get an idea in the next half hour. That would destroy it probably.
Yeah. Stress ruins my creativity. A lot of artists have to suffer for their work. I'm the opposite. I have to be constantly happy. And if I'm not feeling good, nothing works. So, yeah.
Does that mean you have a glass of wine before you start?
Exactly. Yeah. No, actually, I wish. But the sad thing is, even if I have one glass of wine, creativity is gone.
Because you got to have that concentration as well as the relaxation.
Yeah. So I can't afford to have a drinking problem. So. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So when did you figure out that was going to be your working process?
It was an accident. You know, I used to get a lot of my ideas when I first started when I was hiking or driving. But I always have to be someplace alone. It has to be someplace really quiet. Mm-hmm. And not like a place like this where there's a blender.
Right. Exactly.
So it has to be, and even visually, it has to be pretty mundane. I mean, when you're driving, that's okay.
Yeah.
But if there's people, it doesn't work.
You run over them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it has to be some places where I'm kind of alone. I would make a great hermit. I always figured if I went to jail, I'd get so many ideas if I just sit in my cell all day. So always got that going for me.
But the other part of creativity is knowing the idea that you've got, it's actually a good idea. You know, I live with a 12-year-old comedian, and you know, that might be part of the process that's not so developed yet. And I'm sure, you know, as your stuff has gotten funnier, you've looked back at your old stuff and said, well, why did I think that was funny, right?
I mean, I look at my stuff now and I think that. But I've also learned that what I like is not necessarily what other people like.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Some of my most popular strips that have sold the most on T-shirts or coffee mugs have been strips that I thought were just okay. Mm-hmm. And then the ones I think are really winners, nothing. So I've learned that just crank it out and let fate decide.
Yeah, it seems like it's working, right?
Yeah,
and you can't be hilarious every single time, but
no. But well,
you've got a much higher percentage, frankly, than most of the strips in the paper, and I think it's interesting that you've been doing it this long and it still seems as fresh. Because I think you'd be thinking, oh my gosh, did I already do that? You know, is that Is that part of your process?
Oh, yeah. And you got to kind of, some after 20 years, you're going to cross over lines that you've already been to before. Obviously, mm-hmm. I do a lot of snowman cartoons, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And there's some similarities, and all cartoonists do that. I mm-hmm. mean, Garfield has, what, like 7 main things. Lasagna, I Hate Mondays, I Hate Spiders, Pushy Nodi, yeah. you know.
I think that might be an example of where you're ready for some new material.
But at the same time, he's the most successful strip in the world.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of balance mm-hmm. with, you know, a lot of people get to know a character. And they fall in love with it, mm-hmm. and they don't want it to change.
Right.
And so Garfield is perfect for that. Mm-hmm. But my strip doesn't have a lot of characters that have, you know, not Garfield's like a main character. My
right.
strip's mostly just animals and people.
You're more like the Far Side, where it's just kind of like numerous that. Different situations, but
yeah.
it's sort of a commonality in terms of the sense of reality, mm-hmm. right? You know,
yeah.
that there's this reality you've created, and then there's people, these animals are coming in and going.
Mm-hmm. All these little bit players that
right.
are, yeah, with no real names.
Mm-hmm.
But so I want people to fall in love with my strip too, but since I don't have a character for them to really like identify with, like Garfield mm-hmm. or Beetle Bailey or Higger the Horrible, I have to rely on the whole strip to kind of have its own personality.
Right.
And over the years, hopefully that's happened where my characters, when someone picks up one of my pieces of artwork, they go, oh, that's Chad Carpenter.
Yeah.
I can tell. It's just, it looks like his work.
I would think so, yeah.
And that's pretty neat. I like that continuity to it, to where people can recognize it, even if they don't see my name or a character they recognize.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talking with cartoonist Chad Carpenter today. He's the creator of Tundra, which is found, I guess, in 500 newspapers, started right here in Anchorage. Chad still lives in Wasilla. I would like to get you to sign my son's a book. We've got a crazy Tundra fan in our household, Joey, and he's going to be really excited. And he is an erstwhile or beginning cartoonist himself.
Ah, good.
And, you know, everybody wonders, well, how do you go about doing this? You mentioned that you got started, a small time, and then you sort of started building it. And it kind of blew up to being a big national thing, you know, recently. But you also had to develop your craft and figure out how to draw and how to create a strip. And how did that come about?
Well, if we go back in time a little more, back to before I started doing Tundra, like high school, I was always drawing. And then, even then, I wanted to be a cartoonist, but I didn't know how to do it.
Right.
pardon me. Got a lump of tea in my throat there. I was really lucky that I had an uncle who lived in Sarasota, Florida. And he had an art gallery down there, a 19th century fine art gallery. But he also knew Dick Brown, who did Hagar the Horrible, and Mike Peters, who does Mother Goose and
Grimm. By good fortune.
And they lived in Sarasota as well. And he knew I wanted to, and my uncle, Uncle Doug, knew I wanted to be a cartoonist. So he said, you know what, if you come down here and work in the gallery, I'll introduce you to these guys, and we'll see, you know, if that inspires you.
Uh-huh.
That's what I did, and it inspired me. I used to go to Dick Brown's studio and watch him draw Hagar.
Oh, wow.
And that was very inspiring, because when I first met him, he had a bunch of different offices where his inkers and letterers were. But he had one little office, one room, and it was packed full of Viking paraphernalia, uh-huh. you know, toys and stuffed, you know, characters. And here's this man in his 70s surrounded by toys and fun, goofy
yeah.
things. And I thought, this is my kind of job.
Uh-huh.
And that was when I really thought, okay, maybe uh-huh. this would be
and
a
you're
a
also
career.
Watching how he does it, so
yeah.
like you get mm-hmm. an idea of like what the steps are.
Yeah, and that's exactly how I still do it
yeah.
today.
And could you show us some of your...
Absolutely. Let me finish this guy right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, well, we got to show this.
Book.
So Tundra Organically Grown Humor, is this one of the real recent ones?
It's about 3 or 4 years
ago. He's got a lot. We've got yeah. a lot of them. Look at this great this great autograph where he's like got our own little cartoon there. That's great. Do you do that a lot?
Yeah, anytime I sign a book, I always scribble a drawing.
Awesome.
In it.
So how do people find out where you're going to be, where they could meet you? And do you have regular times when you are out in the public?
Pretty much, yeah.
Your website?
During the weekends, I'm at the weekend market, or my flunky Zach is there for me.
Right.
So a lot of people have gotten to know Zach. He's been a big part of Tundra.
Uh-huh.
Funny story about Zach. I met him when he was 10 years old. He's 29 now. He used to come up to my booth at the state fair, and he was just a little kid, and he would just keep talking. He would never shut up, never shut up. And I got so tired of him. He would be there every day of the fair. And I finally said, kid, I'll give you $2 an hour to leave. And so I used to pay him to leave. And it lasted for a couple of years.
You're going to give more people an idea here.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that anymore because Zach is still with me now. Yeah. In fact, he ended up living in my house with my wife and I for a year or so.
Oh, wow.
When he was older. But and now he's like a part of the family. But it started out where I just paid him to go away. But now I'm still paying him.
Cool.
And he's still not going away. But he's such a good salesman. Uh-huh. And he loves Tundra. And he's just a natural when it comes to dealing with people.
So, so you brought some sketches?
Yes. So I'm going to show you kind of, this is, I did the old-fashioned way, just like Dick Brown did. It's just an ink on paper.
Wow. So you're not using a computer, you're just like, wow.
No, just the old-fashioned.
What kind of pen do you use?
It's a Micron Pigma liner. I get them at any art supply store.
Do you start with pencil or do you
light blue pencil. I use a light blue pencil. It doesn't photocopy. If you use the right light blue pencil, it can't be just any. It has to be a non-photocopying type. And then I just, after I sketch it with the light blue pencil, then I go over it with the ink. And then when I scan it in the computer after this, for this one example, I used it to make the cover of the 2013 calendar. And so that's what it looks like in color.
That's really great. So the fish are pushing the bear over the waterfall. You just realized it.
For those on the radio, this is probably a boring spot for you. But trust me, it's hilariously funny.
So what we've got is a bear at the top of a waterfall, and the salmon have figured out they could push him over the edge. So you're just you're conceiving of it, sketching it in pencil, inking it, and then coloring it, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then how long does all that take?
Of course, the hard part's getting the idea.
Right.
That's where all the time goes. To sketch this one and then ink it in really is not long, half hour, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's the easy part. And coloring it might be half an hour, you know, something like this. So it's really an easy process. It's low tech, except for the, you know, scanning and coloring. You have to have a computer. Mm-hmm. But as far as the basics, it's very portable. I can travel anywhere and draw.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I like that.
So, but you're producing strips for 7 days of newspapers per week, including a color strip on Sunday.
Yeah.
So you've got to, I assume, produce multiple strips in a day in order to get ahead so you can take a day off now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's not easy. And I'm especially now that I'm in so many papers and I'm doing a lot of things outside of Alaska, I'm having to work ahead so much more than I ever used to. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always behind. And it's difficult. It really is. It's the hardest job I've ever had.
I mean, if you were to, of course, before you were a security guard, so it's not saying much, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, security guards. Just a little joke. But I mean, you were.
I agree.
But you're. I mean, if you get sick or something and you can't produce a strip, then what, do they just rerun them, or has that ever happened?
It has not happened yet.
All these 20 years. Wow.
Yeah, I just keep. Yeah, I've gone through some horrible moments of my life, but I keep cranking out this stuff. There was a period of a year in my life where it was really pretty bad. There was a lot of bad things happening.
Yeah.
And I was ready to give this up. And this was 12, 15 years ago. So it was towards the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And my brother, my big brother, Darren, he lives in Fairbanks. And he came up with ideas for at least a month, maybe 2 or 3 months straight. Almost every idea I used was his because I was in no condition to come up with anything funny. And so he really saved my career at one point. And he still, to this day, is really gives me a lot of ideas.
So do readers give you ideas too? Like
a lot of bad ones. And every now and then a good one. And it's like anything. Even I come up with a lot of ideas that I don't use. Mm-hmm. Because they're just, they're not ready, they're not good, they're not, you know, this don't work.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't want people to feel bad if they send me an idea and I don't use it. It's just, even I come up with a lot of ideas that are stupid. And so whenever someone, I used to respond to each one, but I can't anymore. It's just too many. Because, you know, we're in 500 papers.
So you might get massive numbers of emails.
Yeah.
And it's tundra.com or tundracomics.com?
Tundracomics.com.
Okay, we'll put a link on our website.
Sweet.
Yeah. So how many a day, or how many contacts are coming in?
I don't know. It just seems
more
like
than
a lot.
You can handle.
Yeah, it's more than I can handle.
But you're still a one-man show, basically.
Well, with the emails, sadly, yes. But my wife Karen, she does all the book work, all the contracts. She does all the number stuff, anything that deals with paperwork that makes me glaze over.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a real good accounting background, and so I was very blessed to have her in my life to take over that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Our Tundra's kind of made up of three different people that really keep it going. You got Bill, my marketing guy,
mm-hmm.
who has gotten me in all these newspapers and gets me all the contacts for contracts. Because we have a lot of books and calendars out there that are nationwide, not just the ones I do here.
Right.
And that's all from Bill. And then I have him, so he does all that part of it. And then my wife, of course, does all the numbers and accounting mm-hmm. and all that. And then I do the art side. It's like the perfect storm. And we couldn't do it without all three of us. And then, uh-huh. of course, I got my flunky, Zach, who's out there peddling the stuff.
He's your back. He's got your back.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. So it's a team effort. It really
and
is.
And then you've got a one-year-old thrown into the mix.
He doesn't help at all. Not yet.
Well, I'm just asking, every time I've called you to set up the show today, I've heard him in the background, mm-hmm. and I wondered, well, okay.
You're crying?
Yeah.
That was probably me.
Well, there's definitely something going on that did not sound conducive to quiet, contemplative creativity.
Yeah, that's my little boy.
Has that added a little bit of a challenge to the whole mix?
Absolutely. Yeah, it takes a lot of, and it's amazing how much, any parent out there obviously already knows this, uh-huh. but it takes so much time. To even though Karen does most of the taking care of our little baby, his name is Castle.
Mm-hmm.
But Karen takes care of Castle most of the time. But even the amount of time that I take care of him, or he's in my studio,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing. I can't focus on anything. I have to focus on him to make sure he's not, sticking a fork in the electric outlet,
yeah,
or
right.
something like that, or sticking a fork in the dog or whatever. It's and I think I'm overprotective anyway. So
yeah,
a lot of
yeah.
it's my fault.
Well, does he give any inspiration, or where does the inspiration come from? I mean, are you a hunter, or you spend a lot of time outdoors?
You would think I would. It's one question I get is I don't do any hunting or fishing.
Uh-huh.
It's not because I don't want to, although I have no desire to hunt. I'm too lazy. But
right.
fishing, I love sitting in a canoe uh-huh. with a fishing pole. That's my kind of fishing,
mm-hmm.
not combat fishing. But my dad, big hunter, fisherman, uh-huh. State trooper, the whole thing. He was the real man, and then he's got me as a son. But he's still very proud,
He should be.
I'm going to take care of him when he's old, so he better be proud. So at least he better fake it.
You better like those moose and bears.
That's
and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. It's a meal ticket.
Actually, I get a lot of ideas from my dad, too.
Uh-huh.
He gives me a lot of ideas.
Uh-huh.
I love it when he gives me an idea, because it's usually something I never would have thought of.
Yeah. Well, it would seem, I think a lot of people would think, well, after your comic strip is in 500 newspapers, and you're publishing all these books, and you've got all the success, why aren't you in Hollywood? Why are you still in Wasilla? And you were in Sarasota and moved back to Alaska.
Yeah.
There's something about being here that's important to you.
Oh, yeah. I lived in Florida, and I even lived in California for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's just no place like home. I mean, this is just, I can't imagine not living there. Mm-hmm. It's nice to get out,
uh-huh.
January, February. But, yeah, this is home.
You must be the second most famous person from Wasilla.
I used to be the first for years. And then someone else showed up. I can't remember her name. But that's actually when I do lectures. That's usually how I open the lectures. I used to be the most famous person from Wasilla. But being from Wasilla and because of Sarah Palin, I think has also helped Tundra, because as soon as an editor finds out that I'm from Wasilla, it's an icebreaker.
Sure.
Regardless of where
do
they
you
sit
know?
Politically.
And
yeah.
do you know her?
Yeah. Well, when she was a senior, when I was a freshman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Her little sister was in my class, Molly.
It's a pretty small town.
Yeah, it's a small town. But no, we're not golfing buddies or anything. In fact, I'm sure security would take me away if I showed up in the driveway.
Right.
But
you don't do political humor at all, really.
No. I there's enough of that out there.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to make everybody happy, really. Mm. I don't want to offend that. Although I do offend.
Well, there's
times.
A lot. I mean, it's scatological humor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not exactly.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
I get some emails.
It's gentle. I mean, it's not
from
offensive,
California.
But it's, sometimes it's a little bit on the edge, eh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sitting at the breakfast table and you see a pile of dung with flies,
Right.
But yeah, I get enough of those complaints, so I don't need the political
right.
stuff. And I don't care where somebody sits politically. I want to make them laugh. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not there to only for one team. Mm-hmm. You know, I certainly have my opinions, but I don't express it mm-hmm. in my work.
Mm-hmm. You know, some great newspaper cartoonists have done it, sort of hit their peak, and then sort of quit at their peak. You know,
lucky.
We're talking about Gary Larson yeah. with The Far Side, or Bill mm-hmm. Larson with Collar and Hobbs, yeah. and Burke Breathe with Bloom County. Mm-hmm. How do you see yourself? I mean, do you see yourself doing this in another 20 years, or what's your long term vision of where this thing goes?
Now that I have my little 1 year old castle, yeah, I can see it yeah. doing another 20 years. Yeah,
you'd have to write yeah. some strips to pay for those college tuitions,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't imagine quitting now, because I'm actually enjoying it more now than I mm-hmm. ever have before, and. You know, a lot of cartoonists die at the drawing table. Mm-hmm. This seems to be the way. I mean, literally, some of them drop dead at the drawing table. Uh-huh. Don't have any problem with that.
Doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah,
huh?
That's not too bad.
You're lucky to be doing something you really enjoy, and that yeah. gives you a lot of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, great. It's just been a real pleasure.
Oh,
I've really
you,
enjoyed talking with you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I guess people could find out where you might be signing and stuff on your website. Do you put
mm-hmm.
that up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to update that, actually. So
right.
hopefully by the time this airs, it'll...
Just one more thing to fit into your busy schedule.
That's yeah. right. That's right. Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been One-on-One. I'm Charles Walforth talking with Chad Carpenter, the creator of Tundra. And we'll see you again next week at the same time.
One-on-One is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated. John LaFournaise directs and edits the show. Pat Yak is the producer. Camera operators are Travis Gilmore and Josh Edge. Audio engineers are Dave Waldron and Kristen Spack. One-on-One is recorded at Pilati Brothers Cafe at JL Tower. You can watch One-on-One Sunday nights at 6:30 p.m. and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on KAKM Channel 7 TV, or listen Thursdays at 1 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage. Tune in next week for One-on-One when host Charles Woolforth interviews artist Sheila Wine. This is KSKA Anchorage FM 91.1.